This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a new charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
I'm very grateful for the honor, and it is a distinct honor, of being our party's nominee for re-election to the United States Senate.
Welcome to a moment they said was not possible. But tonight, here in Florida, we've learned that anything is possible in this great nation of ours.
I promise you, Republicans and independents who voted for me and those Arizonans who did not, I will do my best to prove worthy of the honor.
There will at least be one person in Washington, D.C. standing up to this agenda and offering in its place a clear alternative. It will be me, your voice from right here in Florida. I'm confident the next time we're back here together, we'll be claiming victory once again. Thank you.
Well, that's Senator John McCain of Arizona and GOP Senate candidate from Florida, Marco Rubio, declaring victory in the primaries and hopefully, they say for themselves, victory in the midterm elections to come. Many people have been speculating wildly on the politics of these midterm elections. History has a lot to say about this, although history's constantly rewriting itself. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. on this Thursday afternoon, August the 26th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking with Mark Hemingway of the Washington Examiner for the first few minutes of this hour of Issues Etc. about Tuesday's primary elections, driving toward the midterms. Pastor Carlos Hernandez will join us a little bit later, marking the five-year anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. Pastor Hernandez is with LCMS World Relief and Human Care. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway will be with us. We're going to cover two issues with her, the media coverage of the proposed building of the mosque near Ground Zero. Time magazine saying it's Islamophobia. We'll see whether or not Molly agrees. We'll also talk about something she's noticed lately, an increased use of the Lord's name, Jesus Christ, in vain. And then in the last few minutes of the program, we'll talk personhood theory and human rights with Colleen Carol Campbell of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Our call-in number for the next hour, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. We have a Twitter address. It's @issuesetc. Or visit our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Mark Hemingway is editorial page staff writer for the Washington Examiner and a regular guest. Mark, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
What was the biggest surprise for you in Tuesday's elections?
Well, you know, obviously I think Joe Miller is the thing that everybody's talking about up in Alaska where, I mean, no one saw that coming. That might be, in fact, be the political surprise of the year if he, in fact, pulls off an upset over the incumbent Senator Lisa Murkowski in the primary there.
What exactly did happen there? I mean, how do you think that actually occurred?
Well, I think it's just, you know, it's Alaska. I mean, it's kind of a crazy state. It's a hard state to poll, you know. I mean, it's first of all, it's huge, you know. You got to get to all these different, you know, population centers. And so just nobody really had a close bead on it. No one was really paying attention to it because they thought that, you know, Alaska's kind of, you know, had a problem with machine politics for sort of a long time. You know, Sarah Palin, for her to her credit, actually, you know, people don't give her credit for this, was, you know, really broke out of that machine and actually directly took on sort of the Republican machine establishment they had up there. And so people just assumed that Murkowski, through inertia and being, you know, protege of Ted Stevens and all this, would just come on through and, you know, win the primary because there wasn't a lot known about Miller and no reason to particularly get excited about him. But, you know, as we've seen time and time again this year, you know, this is the year if you're an outsider, you know, your chances are going to go up dramatically than you know, normally you would, that would be seen as a negative if somebody doesn't have the money and influence and everything else. But voters are really looking for something different.
Let's talk about some of the Senate primaries beginning. Let's just start in Nevada. What happened there?
Oh, well, you know, we saw, you know, earlier this year, Sharon Angle surprised a fairly crowded field of some good candidates in the state to with the backing of the Tea Party to seize the Republican nomination there. Now that's been an interesting campaign ever since, because Engel is, you know, very, very conservative, and she seems to have a habit of saying things that get her into trouble politically. Although I would say, in Engel's defense, a lot of the things that she says, you know, Beltway pundits tend to, you know, get up in arms about these things. But like when, you know, Sharon Engel talks about, you know, the Second Amendment in the context of, you know, armed revolution against the government, or the fact that there is no strict separation of church and state outlined in the Constitution, that kind of, you know, thing, which are two examples of two things that she said that have been, you know, two topics she's discussed that have been controversial. Those kinds of things sound very different to, you know, rural Nevada voters than they do, you know, inside sort of a liberal Beltway establishment. So I think that a lot of people have been going out of their way to declare her this extreme candidate. But, you know, the polls are still very close. She's either right at neck and neck with Harry Reid, or, you know, has been leading most of the way. So, you know, again, this is the year to run as a political outsider.
What would it mean, a victory there in the Senate, if Reid were to lose?
Well, it would be huge symbolically, obviously, because, you know, Reid is the Senate majority leader. But, you know, also, you know, you look at the way the wind has been blowing politically over the last 10 years or so. We've seen Democrats make inroads into a lot of, you know, more traditionally Republican areas, you know, Nevada being a classic example. You know, Nevada, along with Colorado and some other states out in the Mountain West, have gone from, you know, more solidly I should say libertarian to Republican-leaning states to, you know, states that were purplish or even lean red. And this, you know, would definitively shift the momentum back toward, you know, a more, you know, conservative libertarian, you know, attitude in the Mountain West. The other thing is, I mean, just in general, we're already looking at a situation where, you know, economic dissatisfaction and everything, there was an article in the Politico this morning, I mean, Democratic pundits are just conceding that the House is going to be, you know, won by Republicans. The question is how many inroads the Republicans can make in the Senate. Nate Silver, who's like the pollster du jour these days, New York Times, you know, and you know, admittedly something of a liberal, is saying that, you know, Republicans are going to pick up at least 6 or 7 seats in the Senate, which is not enough for a majority, but he concedes there's a real chance Republicans could even take a majority in the Senate now. So we're not just looking at a situation where Republicans could, you know, win back the House, they could also win back the Senate. And also, when you look at the Senate map and who's running all those things, you know, you see a situation where you have Marco Rubio down in Florida, Sharon Engel in Nevada, Rand Paul in Kentucky. You know, we're not just talking about, you know, Republicans winning, we're talking about some real fire-breathing, ideologically motivated conservatives who are going to, you know, who are very likely going to end up with Senate seats.
What's driving this? I mean, before we go on to some more of the particulars, is it merely economic dissatisfaction, 2 years running of high unemployment, and the perception that President Obama's administration and his team, if you will, legislatively, have been spinning their wheels on that subject?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I don't think anyone could possibly underestimate the effect of the economy on voters' mood. But I think if you look at some of the things that have been going on politically, a real theme has emerged where, you know, the average Joe Sixpack American is getting, you know, really upset and angry because what they see again and again, they see steps being taken that really benefit the elites in Washington, or, you know, the elites of big business. So just generally there's this stratification of America, and, you know, class issues are rising to the surface where you see a lot of things happening that, you know, benefit a very small group of people. And I think Americans are sort of getting sick of that. I mean, you know, a good example, you know, would be, you know, all the bank bailouts. So, you know, those started under Bush and they've continued under Obama. You know, the General Motors bailout, which, you know, really was, you know, it works both ways. So you're not just bailing out, you know, businessmen. You know, the General Motors bailout was very much a way of bailing out the United Auto Workers to the tune of, you know, $60 billion or whatever. And everybody's getting fed up with this idea that you have to be part of some, you know, political class or, you know, special interest in order to get ahead in America. And I think that has emerged as a theme, and that's really driving a lot of this this discontent.
That used to be something used to great aplomb by the Democratic Party, kind of the class awareness if you will, and now it seems to be shifting over more to the libertarian way of thinking. Am I misreading it?
No, you're not at all misreading it, although what I would say, it would be a misread to say, you know, that this is in any way, you know, a Republican thing. You know, your Republicans are benefiting because they're the party out of power, but I think what you're seeing, you know, is a lot of dissatisfaction with the status quo, with incumbents. I mean, for instance, you know, there have been a number of incumbents that have been upset in elections. You know, Bennett in Utah, we had an incumbent Republican senator who was very, you know, moderate Republican, you know, got ousted in favor of a, you know, more Tea Party friendly candidate. That's the way the wind is blowing. It's not something that, you know, is a de facto, you know, doesn't fall along the normal political party fault lines.
With only about 30 seconds before we take a break here, are both major parties discovering that significant portions of their base are, in fact, in practice, libertarian?
I think that there's definitely something to that. I mean, just the size and role of government has changed radically, particularly under Obama with some of the things he's proposed, the stimulus package, you know, health care and other things like that. People are starting to realize that it's having a pretty profound effect on their lives, and it's happened rather quickly.
When we come back, a few more minutes with Mark Hemingway, editorial page staff writer for the Washington Examiner, talking about Tuesday's primary elections. He talked about the Mountain West and mentioned Colorado. We'll talk a little bit about what actually happened in Colorado. I wanted to come to that Florida race, too, because Florida is, I mean, it's a significant state when it comes to midterm elections, and it's a very significant state when it comes to the next full term elections as well. It's Thursday afternoon, August the 26th. Mark Hemingway is our guest. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. We have an email address right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at @issuesetc as well. More with Mark after this.
The sounds of rich liturgy and historic Christian worship. What a way to spend a Sunday morning. At Trinity Lutheran Church in Millstadt, Illinois, you'll find authentic Christianity as you hear the preaching of Christ crucified for the forgiveness of your sins. Come, join us Sunday mornings at 9 and Monday evenings at 7:30, and find out more about Trinity Lutheran Church, Millstadt, Illinois, at trinitymillstadt.org.
You'll find the reformer Martin Luther's thoughts on Jesus' high priestly prayer and the passion and resurrection according to John in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August, Luther's Works, Volume 69. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Luther's Works, Volume 69 by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Luther's Works, Volume 69, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Imagine SteadfastLutherans.org as the internet version of your neighborhood pub. Your neighborhood confessional Lutheran pub, that is, where the finest in Lutheran conversation is going on at every table and at the bar, sometimes contentious, but always informative and unabashedly Lutheran. We're only serving Wittenberg Ale. We even have a guy named Norm, so check us out. www.steadfastlutherans.org. We'll save a seat at the bar for you.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology. And we'd like to send you an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker. Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Mark Hemingway of the Washington Examiner is our guest for a few more minutes. Then we'll talk about the five-year anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. Pastor Carlos Hernandez of LCMS World Relief and Human Care will be with us. Mark, let's talk about Florida. I understand that there's kind of a three-way race now forming up there. What's going on?
Yeah. Well, you have a situation where Charlie Crist, the Republican governor of the state, was sort of, again, a very moderate Republican, wasn't catching a lot of wasn't catching a lot of snag there with the electorate, and Marco Rubio came along, you know, a state politician who is, you know, again, this fire-breathing conservative Cuban, and he's got great political potential. He's, you know, he's young, handsome, got great, you know, great speaking skills, and just sort of blew Crist out of the water. Again, you know, no one saw it coming, but the Republican primary electorate certainly was in the mood for someone much more conservative than Charlie Crist. And, of course, Charlie Crist has a reputation for being somewhat self-interested and craven. I don't think I'm being overly unfair, although there might be a shade of my opinion in that assessment. Ended up running an independent bid, thinking that, you know, he could split the vote, and because he was modern enough, he could steal from both the Democrats and the Republicans in the state. Well, for a while there, Crist was leading in the polls against Kendrick Meek, who's a Democratic congressman from Florida, and Marco Rubio. And as it happens, it looks like people from both parties are sort of coming home after, you know, flirting with Crist there for a while. Plus, it didn't help that Crist was enmeshed in some. He was mixed up in some Republican Party politics down there, where there were some Republican Party officials that were charged with crimes and whatnot. So that Crist was tainted in that way. And according to the latest poll, I think that I just saw, like, earlier today, I think it was a public policy polling, a Democratic polling firm. Not quite sure, but I know that the number was they're showing, you know, Rubio with a 10-point lead in the state right now. And again, you know, Florida is generally a moderate swing state, and, you know, you have the guy leading in the Senate race is, you know, everyone acknowledges is a, you know, a big-time conservative. He's leading by 10 points.
Okay. Do you think, you mentioned before that summer counting is a foregone conclusion. What do you think? Will Republicans gain control of the House?
Yeah, no, I think that almost every that's accepted wisdom these days. I mean, you know, granted, you know, who knows? It's politics. You know, something crazy could happen between now and November. But, you know, structurally, all the forces we're looking at, almost everyone accepts that the Republicans are going to take the House.
Is the Senate a possibility?
Absolutely. Like I said, Nate Silver, the big pollster, you know, hot shot that everyone looks to these days, who's an admitted progressive and now blogs in the New York Times, he says there's a 20% chance Republicans will take the Senate. It's not just a situation where Republicans are more popular. It's just it's a structural thing. You know, it's one of these years where there was a whole bunch of Democratic seats up that are vulnerable, and there's not a lot of Republicans up for election re-election that are vulnerable. Just, you know, sort of how things, you know, come up, you know, a certain way in certain election years, depending on who's running and who's being elected, what election cycle.
And will, if it goes as many think it will President Obama move more toward the center after the midterm elections? And if he does, what will it mean for him?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's what Bill Clinton did rather famously. People forget that his first 2 years were actually full of a lot of, you know, liberal, some sort of big liberal moves. And then he did move to the center, and he did, you know, thrive as a president thereafter. I don't know about Obama. I mean, we'll see. But, you know, he's as liberal as the things that Bill Clinton did. You know, Bill Clinton was always a southern governor, and he was always, you know, there was less, you know, out-and-out liberalism in Bill Clinton's DNA than there is in Barack Obama's. And not only that, the things that Bill Clinton did do, I mean, he did some bold liberal moves, but, you know, nothing nearly as bold as, say, the healthcare reform bill that they passed against, you know, the wishes of the majority and, you know, keep trying to pound. And, you know, the administration just keeps doubling down on these unpopular policies. Just 2 days ago, I mean, you know, Joe Biden held a big event celebrating the stimulus, which, you know, every poll tells you that Americans loathe that thing and they're, you know, sick and tired of government spending, and the administration is still trying to get political mileage out of it. So I don't know, that would certainly be the smart thing to do. But, you know, they've urged Obama, the pundits have classes urged Obama to move to the center many, many times prior to this, and he has not done it.
Mark Hemingway is editorial page staff writer for the Washington Examiner. You can read his articles at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Mark, thanks.
Thanks.